one American at a time.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So this week we start our Paracast with a letter that we got from Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Of course, she was the one who appeared with a short interview from the International UFO Conference in Phoenix. And then later on, a joint appearance with Phil Ambrogno, the disgraced UFO researcher who turned out to have totally fake credentials. And now we have a letter from Rosemary, who was going to write a new book with him called Multidimensional Portals. And as a result of all this, of course, she can't attach her name to something like that. So she sent us this note that she wanted us to read. It's also posted in our forums at forum.theparacast.com. And here it is. Unaltered, complete message. The second book I was to write with Philip J. Ambrogno, Multidimensional Portals, scheduled to be published this December by Llewellyn, has been canceled with the help of my attorney. Ambrogno's portion of the completed manuscript contained outright fabrications and potential copyright violations. In parens, she says plagiarism. Whoops, let's go on. Especially pertaining to his science, which is in quotes. I have the rights to my own material back and am pursuing other projects. I have no further association with Phil. End of message. An end of a very sorry episode, don't you think?
Boy, I hope so. It's really been a tawdry affair, and I really feel for Rosemary. She's such a sweet lady, consummate professional. I learned more than a few things when we did our trip in May to the San Luis Valley. She was absolutely invaluable in the field. She really has just a grace about her that I really admire, and she is so well-versed in the field, and she's just a joy to work with. And I'm just so happy that she's managed to extricate herself without any undue harm, I think, to her professionally from this whole tawdry affair. And I really think it's really unfortunate that someone like Phil Ambrogno would take advantage of such a wonderful light like Rosemary. You may not agree with some of the subjects that she's written on, or you may have problems with some of the width and breadth of her material. But one thing that you can't say is that she's not a stickler for crossing her I's and dotting her T's. And it's really unfortunate when you trust somebody to the extent that she did, you know, trusting Ambrogno, and then having this whole tawdry affair just, you know, unfold very dramatically, I think. It's just, I'm so happy that she's been able to extricate herself from any contractual obligations that she may have had.
So as far as we're concerned over here in the Paracast, Phil Ambrogno does not exist. Let's just drop it. Let's move on to another subject, more pleasant one. There's an article from Kathleen Martin in the current issue of the MUFON Journal. And Kathleen, of course, has been a friend of the show. She is Betty Hill's niece. So what she says in this article is that on July 20th of this year, the state of New Hampshire erected an historical marker to commemorate the 1961 close encounter that resulted in the abductions by the Hills. And I have a picture of it right here. It simply says Betty and Barney Hill incident, and then there's a paragraph about the case, which I'll read to you because consider this almost an official recognition that something interesting happened. Because why else would the government erect, you know, a marker for this? Certainly it's better than a bridge to nowhere, which they spend, what, $50 billion for. It says, right. It says on the night of September 19th and 20th, 1961, Portsmouth, New Hampshire couple Betty and Barney Hill experienced a close encounter with an unidentified flying object and 2 hours of lost time while driving north on Route 3 near Lincoln. They filed an official Air Force Project Blue Book report of a brightly lit cigar-shaped craft the next day, but were not public with their story until it was leaked in the Boston Traveler in 1965. This was the first widely reported UFO abduction report in the United States. Betty and Barney Hill. So if you go to this particular location next to the highway in front of Cabin 20 at the Indian Head Resort in North Lincoln, New Hampshire, you will see this little monument erected to Barney and Betty Hill. There you go.
How fitting.
Isn't it, though? I mean, you know, there are issues of concern I've said about the case. And I know I got a really nasty letter from somebody just a couple of weeks ago when I mentioned on the show, in connection with another guest, again, my question about whether the Barney and Betty Hill incident was somehow part of a disinformation effort by the Air Force. They lived there in the military base and everything. And, of course, I was attacked for that, saying, of course, it's preposterous, and maybe it is. But I raised the question, but still, so far as I know, Betty Hill was a very sincere person. I met her a couple of times. She seemed like the nicest woman. If you ever wanted a grandmother, Betty Hill would be a great candidate. Really, she's just a wonderful lady.
Well, Gene, I think your observation, you know, it's not by coincidence that that it happened to somebody that happened to be closely associated with a military base. So you have to leave all your options open. And I think inquiring minds should always keep in mind all the potentials for a case. And the description of military-style uniforms, I think that alone it makes any sort of, you know, guesswork, you know, in terms of trying to figure out what happened to them and who was responsible. I think the fact that the military uniforms were described does lend some sort of credence to your, you know, what-ifing.
The thing that also bothers me is that map, the star map. I mean, I think that an advanced civilization, hundreds or thousands of years farther in advance than we are, traveling through the stars would have something more sophisticated than a star map for navigation. It was a put-up job. It was put there for their benefit.
Yeah, and I agree. Plus, you know, a star map is only good based on your position in space. So I've never really lent much credence to that. Of course, the location that was featured on that map, of course, was Zeta Reticuli, and that's where I think the meme of the Zeta Reticulan aliens, I think, really originated.
Yeah, you know, before then, I think we were talking about Mars. Really? Remember back, if you read of books of the 1950s about UFOs, Major Keogh and others, they talked about Mars, you know. Of course, they gave up on Venus when we found out it was a hothouse there. But Mars, you know, although, you know, even with all the mysteries of Mars, at the very least, I guess it's possible that thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, they had a civilization, and when the atmosphere thinned out, they went elsewhere. Maybe we are the Martians. Think about that.
Yeah. I've always said, you know, when people ask me, so you believe in aliens, or they tell me you believe in aliens, I always say, well, I think we're the aliens. I think whatever's flying around here is probably more terrestrial than we are.
There you go. Well, right now we're going to explore a phenomenon that we haven't touched too many times on the Paracast, and it's about cryptozoology and Bigfoot, all right? And I don't know whether, if they're real, they would be denizens of our planet or aliens. We've got a couple of longtime researchers from the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, Dave Dragason and Eric Altman. And if I pronounce his name wrong, I'll apologize and fix it later. I do that sometimes. I mean, I can say Christopher O'Brien because, you know, I know who he is, I think. But, you know, up till now, like I said, we haven't covered the subject as much as we should. A lot of people suggest that maybe we focus too much on UFOs on the Paracast. And I don't know. We do cover other things. We're going to explore UFOs next week with, of course, a gentleman from Brazil to cover South American UFO sightings. But we've got a lot of other interesting things in the makings. So it's going to be Bigfoot, cryptozoology, and the paranormal coming up next on
the Paracast.
I've got to tell you about this. GoToMeeting by Citrix, the way I meet online with my colleagues, has just added high-definition group video conferencing. It's called GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Now you can collaborate with anyone around the world face-to-face. And I've used GoToMeeting HD Faces because it's awesome. You see the facial expressions, and that can express so much more than words. And of course, the video quality is so clear and natural, it's got the highest resolution in the industry. Nothing compares. GoToMeeting with HD Faces will make your online meetings even more personal, engaging, and effective. Plus, it's so easy to use. All you need is an internet connection and a webcam. I want you to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces. My listeners can try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code PODCAST. The promo code is PODCAST at GoToMeeting.com.
Hi, Jason Lewis here. Anybody who's been listening to my program knows how shaky the U.S. economy is right now. Will we have a V-shaped recovery, or will it be a W-shaped one where the nation slips back into recession? Of course, if you think that Washington can spend or inflate its way out of a downturn, you've got nothing to worry about. But as you know, I have my doubts. So let me tell you about gold. Now, as my friend Ted Anderson from Midas Resources likes to say, gold, like all commodity markets, fluctuates in price, and you could lose money. But it has never been worth zero. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold, or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but has since lost 90% of its value. And if things don't change, I'm afraid the trend will continue. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237 for gold and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Still ready to save? Then you're ready for the fall super sale at HerbalHealer.com. HerbalHealer.com has been the leader in quality natural supplements since 1988. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of incredible fall savings on all sale products running through October 18th. HerbalHealer.com is proud to offer eFoods Global products, premium storable foods that are delicious, contain no MSG, no trans fats, no GMO, and have a 25-year shelf life. All you do is just add water. To learn more, click the eFoods link on HerbalHealer.com, and you can try eFoods storable meals for free. And don't forget to click the specials link for even more savings at HerbalHealer.com. Be sure to sign up for our free newsletter. And as always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature one person at a time. Hurry, sale ends October 18th.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Allie C. Why Allie C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Allie C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Allie C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Allie C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Allie C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Allie C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Allie C. For more information and to order Allie C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Allie C today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news at theparacast.com. That's news at theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
On the Paracast this week, Dave Dragason and Eric Altman, and they're both longtime paranormal investigators, both associated with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. And as some of our listeners know, I lived in Pennsylvania long, long time ago in the galaxy far, far away, actually in eastern Pennsylvania, not in the part where they are. So I didn't see anything strange except for, you know, some of the people down the street. Or maybe they thought I was strange. But I'll let either you, Dave, or you, Eric, answer the first question, which is we have a lot of listeners out there who haven't really studied much on, say, Bigfoot, even though they've seen movies and occasional reality shows. So whoever wants to do this answer, explain what we mean by a Bigfoot. What kind of creature are we always referring to?
David, do you want to take that?
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. What Bigfoot is really a mystery. There's a lot of speculation out there about what the creature is, where it comes from, if it's a descendant of a primate. So we really can't answer what a Bigfoot truly is. However, there's a really good description that we are able to put together and piece together based on witness testimony. And that is, it's a bipedal animal, whether it's a human or a primate, we don't know. But it's a bipedal animal that walks on two legs, usually covered full body in either dark brown, black, gray, or even white-colored hair. Some cases report the creature looks like a human, has a lot of human-like features, especially in the face, and other cases report it looking more like a gorilla. The creature's size is usually about 5 foot to, we've heard cases even up to as high as 10 feet in height. And the weight, we don't know exactly what the weight is, but estimates and guesses from witnesses describe this creature as being massive in size. So they guess 300 to 500, even 1,000 pounds in some cases. What exactly the creature is, we don't know, but we got a really good description based on thousands of eyewitness testimony.
Now, we've heard it referred to by other names, Bigfoot, Abominable Snowman, Yeti, all the same creature, variants, what?
Indigenous tribes of the United States and Canada all have a name for them in their folklore and mystical history. So it is many things to many people.
So this is part of the folklore. So this is something that's been here for a long, long time.
Oh, yes, definitely. This dates back. And there are even cases that people speculate Bigfoot was talked about in the Bible. There are cases about in Genesis, they talk about these giant-like people walking the land. And even in the Epic of Gilgamesh, they talk about that creature. There's a lot of references throughout history, and there's even a lot of artwork that show beings that are covered in hair. So they might be references to the creature, but it goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
So the assumption here is that they are indigenous to Earth. It's not something that's coming in here from an anomaly or another dimension or a wormhole or something.
That's tough to say simply because the book is still being written. I think I'm in compliance with many of the scientists today who would probably lean toward it being a flesh and blood creature, but many people feel because of its supposed mystical qualities that it could be paranormal. But then again, if you want to look at paranormal and try to discern what that means, maybe we lost the ability to become normal in a natural sense, like they've been able to progress, and we've become more attuned to the technological world. So we're kind of like stomping in an area that's a little gray as far as being acceptable in a third dimensional or another dimensional sense. There is talk about possibly the smell that is associated sometimes with Bigfoot could be associated sometimes with the holes that they enter our dimension in and leave, which, you know, there's no validity to it, just theories.
Okay, you mentioned an odor. What kind of odor are we talking about?
Take it, Eric.
Well, not in all cases, but some cases describes a very foul odor associated with the creature. Some examples would be very strong or pungent body odor, a musky-type smell, a wet dog-type smell, decomposing matter or flesh, fecal matter. There's a wide variety of smells that have been associated with some of these sightings. Not all of these cases have odors with them, but some do.
All right, so if we have a race of creatures living around the world, and we only see them occasionally, why can't we get some ironclad evidence that they exist? I mean, there's evidence, obviously, that things are going on. But we can't walk into, you know, the major scientific institutions and say, okay, we have another species here. Let's catalog it and let's figure out what it is.
And going back, by the way, there is a theory as far as a hydrogen sulfide theory is concerned that they may be ingesting and consuming, and their ability to appear to disappear comes into play. I can go into that at a later time in the program. But
well, we'll talk about the characteristic of these creatures. I'm talking about the fact is if we have another species on our planet, and I can't imagine we've discovered everything, what's the obstacle to discovering what this is all about and getting it cataloged so that conventional mainstream science accepts it?
A lot has to do with the stealth that they're capable of and the characteristics of the intricacies of their ability to travel, to migrate and live in groups. To date in very, not only remote areas, but sometimes even populated areas.
So I take it they're very intelligent.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's the general consensus, that they're very intelligent creatures. These tails go back hundreds of years, and they've avoided capture. They've avoided man being killed by man. And we as researchers from the witness testimony believe that they're intelligent enough to elude man. And we consider them, as David said, a very stealthy creature. They have this uncanny ability to hide in the woods and to not be photographed, to not be videotaped, to not be captured or run over by a car, or otherwise we would have had one by now.
And all the evidence that they've ever left behind has been very soft. We're talking handprints, footprints, depressions in the soil, along with possible hair samples over the years. But like I say, it's soft. And of course, you know as well as I do, and I'm sure the people out in radio land and TV land are aware of the fact that very, very few photographs or videos exist, and we don't even want to see that as far as evidence is concerned. What we need is an appendage, a part of a body or an entire body in order to validate what we feel is a creature that does exist. Dr. Jane Goodall feels that there is a great North American ape, three subspecies possibly. So I kind of go into her corner with regard to the characteristics and the physical characteristics of these creatures from British Columbia and Alaska on down through Florida, how they may change in some of their appearances and their characteristics, and then moving over to Texas, the creature that lives in that neck of the woods, so to speak, also comes up with a different physical or physiological appearance. Maybe it's a switch in the DNA or whatever, but we kind of feel that there could possibly be a number of subspecies.
Okay, we'll get into much more of this with Dave Dragason and Eric Altman. We're discovering Bigfoot. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Neighbors, do you need to bring the final touches to your latest podcasts? Clean up the soundtrack of that holiday video. Mix together a few takes from your last jamming session. Process the audio files of the video game you're creating to sound just right. But look no further. Whatever audio-related task you're looking to perform, Amadeus Pro is the tool for you. It's the Swiss Army knife of sound editing. Go to hairersoft.com. HAIRERsoft.com. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
OpticsPlanet.com is where discerning gun owners and outdoorsmen go to gear up. OpticsPlanet has the best selection of rifle scopes, red dots, night vision, holsters, bags, and tactical gear on the planet. With always low prices, free shipping on most orders, and expert customer service. Go to OpticsPlanet.com/GCN to get a free gift with purchase. That's OpticsPlanet.com/GCN or call 800-332-OPTICS, 800-332-6784.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
I use WebEx anytime I need to meet with clients. With the new WebEx high-quality video, it's like meeting face-to-face.
Connect online and share what's on your computer screen with others. Anytime, anywhere. On their desktop, on their laptop, or mobile device. How do you use WebEx? Go to WebEx.com right now and try WebEx free. WebEx from Cisco. WEBEX.com.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it, now you can. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
On the Paracast with Gene and Chris, we're discovering Bigfoot and other stuff coming up with Dave Dragason and Eric Altman for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. They've been studying these things for many years. We're trying to figure out why they seem to be so darned elusive and how do we nail it down. Now, getting to hair samples, and either of you can take this, getting to hair samples, if we had them, we could do DNA testing, I suppose, and figure out that we have a race of creatures here that we haven't cataloged yet.
Well, that is true. However, we don't have a species to match the DNA to. So all we can come up with is it's not matchable or identifiable to any categorized or cataloged animal species or human-like species that we have on record. So all we're left with is an unknown animal. And until we have something to match it to, we can't positively identify what that hair or where that hair came from.
Okay, so we can't identify it, but do we even have the hair sample that we could look into? Is there such a thing? Are there hair samples that we could say, well, it's not a conventional animal?
Oh, yes. There have been hair that's been collected for years by various researchers. And there's a gentleman, Dr. Henner Fehrenbach. He used to work at the Oregon Primate Institute. He's now retired. He would get hair samples from various researchers around the country. They would submit these to him, and he'd do microscopic tests on them. And back then, we really didn't have DNA as an option to work with when he was doing this. But he would be able to look at the structure of the hair and match it with known species of animals that he had cataloged and categorized. And he ruled out a lot of those species with I believe it was 12 or 13 strands of hair that was sent to him. And he felt those were authentic, legitimate Sasquatch hair. Now, he couldn't prove it because he didn't have a specimen or part of a body to match it to, but he felt because they didn't match a known animal, and they were very close to some animals such as primates or even like a hominid, he felt that they were a Bigfoot hare. So, yes, hair has been collected over the years, and most of it's been categorized as either unknown or unspecified creature.
Okay, another question about this. We assume they don't live forever and that at some point they might die. Do we assume their civilization or their culture or whatever they are is advanced enough to bury their dead so we don't ever see that?
Not a fact, but it's kind of like an assumption in many cases, along with the fact that if you're at all familiar with how a corpse in nature can deteriorate and go to nothingness, you'd realize that that can happen quite quickly, depending upon the atmospheric conditions and the, you know, particular area where a body or a corpse is going to lie and be subject to the various insects and creatures that would scavenge it. So it's going to be gone quickly. I've hunted all my life. I've never seen a full body of a bear or a white-tailed deer in the woods. Usually it's maybe a remnant here or a remnant there, but I kind of feel that that answers the question. The book is still being written as far as its social classes or that may exist between the various groups that we think exist across the nation or across the world.
In listening to you for the past few minutes, I get the impression of a creature that's almost a chameleon that seems to blend into its surroundings and maybe change its look. Is that possible?
Yeah, I would say it is, simply because we don't know. So you can't rule out that realm of possibility. These creatures are usually dark in color, like a dark brown or a black. Even when they're grayish in color, they match very, very closely to the bark on the trees, to their natural habitat. So they could be hiding 10 feet away from you in thick brush, and you'd never see them. Chameleon, yeah, I call them a chameleon because they're able to blend into their surroundings so much to the point that we don't see them when we go out in the woods. An encounter is very rare. Do they have that ability to change shapes or change colors? We don't know that. But it can't rule that out of the realm of possibility this time.
Okay, so in general, what's the normal size range? They're always or mostly dark hair.
Boy, that varies. And I'll go by my forensic sketches. I've been called upon recently to utilize some other skills in my file cabinet personally, and I've been drawing some eyewitness reports, and you're talking matted hair, stringy hair, short hair, dark hair, red hair, gray hair, white face, black face. I've accumulated enough sketches to realize that what was seen up in British Columbia maybe 13, 14 years ago also has appeared in 2009 here in southwestern Pennsylvania on a mountaintop in the Chestnut Ridge Mountains, and you're talking like a twin brother as far as facial characteristics and the physiological makeup of this creature. The hair color and the hair types vary, Gene. They really do.
Now, in terms of the noise they make, do they roar at you? Do they speak gibberish? What?
Go ahead, Eric.
We've heard everything. A lot of the witness testimony talks about them giving off a very high-pitched female type of scream. Primates do that. Gorillas, orangutans, chimpanzees, they all let off some kind of high-pitched scream. And it's often been said these creatures do that. But they're also described as giving off low grunts, growls, like a wolf or a barking type noise, howls. And they're thought by many researchers to have the uncanny ability to mimic very well other animals, birds, other creatures in the forest, even humans. They're thought to be able to mimic owls. So they can make a lot of different noises. Unfortunately, I can't say that as a fact because we haven't been able to study them, but we've heard some pretty unusual things in the forest.
Okay, so how do we...
Wait a minute. I can tell you they can roar, too, because my one potential encounter, which featured a very sulfuric, sort of musky, like you said, fecal, sort of human sweat and feces type smell, was accompanied by a roar that I would not know how to describe. It was something cross between a bull elephant, an enraged large cat, and maybe a locomotive. It's the only way I can describe it. It was so loud it bounced off the foothills a couple miles away.
I was getting involved to that. I could not argue with that because that has been reported, certainly, Chris. Yes.
Okay, the obvious question that arises here, are they dangerous creatures? If you see one, will they run away from you or will they run after you?
Well, I know they're territorial, And if you pose a threat to them, they're going to warn you ahead of time by some of the primate language, and that would be the tossing of articles from the forest floor. It could be the size of acorns to rocks the size of cantaloupes, but they seem to be pretty good throwers as far as missing you, but they're going to warn you. We've had reports of a situation in the center of Pennsylvania where a primatologist was studying, and he had one charge him, but only charged him like a silverback would and stop yards away because he had been in this area for a period of, I believe, maybe 6-7 years studying them eating the painted turtle eggs in that area. So they were used to his presence. It's uncanny. The danger is imminent. I would have to say don't get their ire up as far as that's concerned, because I've heard tales where just this past weekend we were at a conference and a gentleman told me that when he was a young boy, and this would be again in the southwestern Pennsylvania area on Laurel Ridge, his grandfather witnessed a creature tear apart 15 dogs in a period of just a matter of minutes as the dogs attacked the creature. This was probably 40 years ago. But he remembers it indelibly in his mind. So if it's threatened, it's going to stand its ground, and because of its size, a huge adult, you know, being anywhere from 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 feet, weighing over 500 pounds, I wouldn't want to mess with it. I wouldn't want to go up against it. And I'm like 280, 6'1". I just can't see anybody threatening it to the point where you're going to, I don't know, not be threatened back, put it that way.
Well, I'll tell you, the Eagles defensive line could sure use a guy like that.
We'll get into that and the sporting implications with Dave Dragason and Eric Waltman. Bigfoot's on the table. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Why is it so many people suffer from so many illnesses today? Why don't doctors know how to help you? Could it be that our doctors don't know how because there's a nutrition solution and they only know about drugs? Over 68 diseases are connected to a deficiency of glutathione. The missing ingredient to increasing your body's production of glutathione is cysteine. Raising your glutathione production protects you from cancer, heart disease, Parkinson's, macular degeneration, lung disease, digestive diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. Nature's richest source of cysteine is unheated whey. Heating can damage much of the cysteine. One World Whey is the first undamaged whey protein on the market. Using One World Whey may support optimal glutathione production unlike any other food or supplement you've ever taken. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget,
crossbreedholsters.com.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
Last week, I started a meeting on my office computer. I had to go cross town for another meeting. So Mike drove, and I was able to finish my WebEx meeting using the WebEx app on my smartphone. This is how you do business.
Connect online and share what's on your computer screen with others. Anytime, anywhere. On their desktop, on their laptop, or mobile device. Go to WebEx.com right now and try WebEx free. WebEx from Cisco. WebEx.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
For this episode, Chris O'Brien has been using his best Bigfoot-style voice. Is that correct, sir?
I haven't even started. I'm just getting warmed up.
Okay. As the episode progresses, you notice his voice gets deeper and deeper, and suddenly it's down. Anyway. Dave Dragason and Eric Altman joining us. We're talking about Bigfoot. We'll get into other stuff soon. But the question that was raised here, obviously you don't want to get their hackles up and you don't want to threaten them. Are there any cases on record where they've attacked people or maybe hurt people?
There are a couple cases that have been reported and documented. Whether or not they legitimately happened, we don't have factual evidence to say that's true. But these cases are older cases from the 1920s and even back in the 1850s. Yes, there are cases in history where these creatures have been reported to have attacked a human or been very aggressive towards humans. We can't prove that factually, but there's documentation that's been written down and collected. Most of these reports come from the early 20th century and the late 19th century. In 1850, there was a report that was filed by Teddy Roosevelt in his book called The Wilderness Hunter. And there's an interesting story in there about a trapper named Bauman and his partner that went into a pass in Idaho to do some prospecting and trapping. And while they were in this area in the mountains, they were approached by this creature. And it would harass them around their camp. It would walk along the tree line. It even came to the mouth of their lean-to one night, and they became so frightened of it, they shot at it. Well, after a few days of this going on, they had enough, and they decided to leave the mountain pass, and they went out to get their traps that next day, and because it was sunny and bright outside, they figured, oh, this creature's not going to come around. They went and collected their traps, and they split up. Bauman's partner said, I'll go back to the camp, clean up the camp, get us ready to go while you collect the rest of the traps. Well, Bauman did that. He collected the rest of the traps, and on returning to the camp, he found his partner with a broken neck and large fang marks in the neck and these huge human-like footprints surrounding the body. Can I say if that story is true and it actually happened? No. It was a tale that was passed on to our former President Roosevelt, but it's one of those documented cases where it was written down. And there's been other cases like this, but they're very, very rare.
Okay, so this is something
around Mount St. Helens. Is a famous one from the early 20s where a Bigfoot was shot by a miner who was part of a group of miners in the area. And that night they were attacked by a group of Bigfoot that were throwing, rolling huge boulders down the hill on them and running full speed into the door.
Right. That was Fred Beck and his encounter with what he called the Hairy Mountain Devils. And it took place in a mountain pass, mountain canyon, that's now known as Ape Canyon. And it's a very famous story. Fred Beck swore it until the day he died. It happened. He wrote a book about it, his battles with the Mountain Devils. And that's just another one of those cases. But here in these two cases, and these are probably one of the few rare ones that happen, both witnesses or both humans shot at these creatures, therefore invoking them, provoking them, and the creature retaliated. It attacked the cabin the miners were staying in. It attacked the bowman's trapping partner and killed him. So there's been cases where they've, you know, been curious and coming around, and for whatever reason, the humans shot at, or, you know, like you said, shot at the one creature, and these creatures retaliated. So I don't think it's a case of them being aggressive or violent. I think it's a case of them being defensive.
Well, it sounds like I'd like to get out of
there. There's been some cases in some Yeti, a very, I think, well-known case in the Tibet Nepal area of a yak herder, a girl, who had a Bigfoot come down and wring the neck of one of her yaks in front of her in broad daylight for no apparent reason. So they can exhibit aggressive behavior, but I do agree that I think those very rare cases where you have real, you know, head-to-head conflict, let's say, are as a result of humans taking shots at them or somehow, you know, really angering these creatures.
There's no doubt that there's a record of various instances whereby chickens have had their necks twisted off, domestic animals who have run toward the beasts or toward the forest creatures have been attacked. They certainly seem not to like cats or dogs that kind of infringe upon their territory. The one story that comes to mind that seems to be kind of an in-your-face, leave-us-alone situation is one from the Texas area and the Sabine River, the East Sabine River, where a hog hunter had baited and was up in a tree and watched while the hogs came up the river at daybreak and noticed something moving from tree to tree. When he put his scope up on what was grabbing his attention, he noticed that it was a big hairy hominid, and it jumped out of the tree and in two leaps swatted a hog up against a tree, ran over, pummeled it to death. The other hog scattered. This creature stood up and gave a couple of whoops and grunts in a direction away from the hunter and was answered in two different directions, as though maybe it was hunting in packs. It turned around, grabbed the hog, put it under its arm, and began to scan the tree line where this hunter was located. It located the hunter and just looked at him and bared its teeth and growled at him, and that's when he noticed it was a female, and she turned and walked away with a hog under her arm. Just as if to say, you know, this is our territory, this is what I've done, and of course he sat in the tree, just dumbfounded for a good half hour before he left, never to return.
Well, I know if I saw anything like that, I'd be running in the other direction. I wouldn't worry about upsetting or provoking anything like that.
How's that for an in-your-face situation? That's my favorite story. That really, really is.
I had a case in the San Luis Valley right along the Colorado-New Mexico border, where a hunter spotted a pair of Bigfoot that appeared to be stalking a herd of elk. And then I think a day or two later, two sets of tracks were found over, you know, various terrain, mud, snow, ice, bare ground. The tracks went for hundreds of yards. They were investigated by the county sheriff's department there. And they found drops of blood that appeared to be they had it tested. It was from an elk, and the larger of the two creatures appeared to have been carrying some, like an elk haunch or something that was dribbling blood as they progressed down this winding trail down towards a river, the Canaanus River. So one of the things that has surprised me in my recent research into Bigfoot is they are hunters. And they do eat meat. I was always under the impression for years growing up, and I never really saw a mention in books about them being, I assume they were omnivores, but you never really saw much mention of their, the more carnivorous elements of their diet, potentially. Have you guys encountered other stories there from the Pennsylvania area where hunters have, seen Bigfoot that appeared to be stalking prey or any sort of sightings that had Bigfoot seen in conjunction with some sort of game animals or anything like that that they appeared to have killed?
Go ahead, Eric. I believe you have a couple.
Yeah, there have been reports sent to us of creatures seen lurking around chicken coops. awesome. We have a really great case from 2006 up in northeastern Pennsylvania where a family came home from the holiday, July 4th, and upon arriving into their driveway, they heard very loud screams and roars coming from the forest behind their house. I went on for about 15 minutes. The next day, the kids were so curious about those screams, they went out to the forest to investigate, and they found a deer, a doe actually, with its front right leg wedged in the Y of a tree, and its back haunch is completely ripped off. No bullet holes, no claw marks or teeth marks in the neck from a cougar, no signs of an animal doing this to this deer. They did find large human-like footprints around this dead deer, and the family was very insistent and very confident that a Bigfoot killed this deer. And I've also heard other reports as well.
You have really good photographs on your website, by the way, that document that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting case, and I have the pictures that the witness sent me the day they discovered the deer, and they're pretty gruesome, and I won't post them because they're pretty gruesome. So those the pictures up on the website are older pictures about a week later when our team arrived on the site to investigate. But it's a very intriguing case, and just one of those cases you mentioned, a lot of people think these creatures are they have a diet of herbs and foliage and nuts and berries. They're vegetarians. But that's not the case. From the reports that we get and the things we hear from other researchers around the country, they do have an omnivorous diet, like a bear. I call them opportunists. They eat whatever they can, whatever they can get.
That doesn't rule out garbage dumps or dumpsters, too, as far as that's concerned.
Our opportunists, they love McDonald's dumpsters.
Well, I understand Wendy's has changed their hamburger recipe, so maybe they're going to change their ways, and we'll have the Bigfoot going after Wendy's next. Okay, so if you ever tried one of the Wendy's burgers, you know, it's now somehow differently made. I won't get into that. We have Eric Altman, Dave Dragason. Bigfoot's on the table, but more's to come. You're listening to Gene and Chris on
The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.